salary or cost of business that references 2016 times 1.3 by Sarah Nehausala, chairs by Chair Senator Diesel and Senator Stevens. Welcome. I'd like to thank our Foreign Secretary Kerry and the LIA operator Ben for being here, making this possible. So today our agenda has set Bill 98, introduced by Senator Machuki. This is description of life is really fun, the chair title. The bill is having its first hearing today. We'll hear from the sponsor, the administration. We'll take members' questions and public testimony. We will set aside for review. I'd also like to welcome Senator Bill 98 there. So, congrats, Senator Machuki, welcome, and thank you for bringing this bill before us today. Come ahead and thank you for being here.
First, thank you, Senator Gusto, and the committee for hearing this bill. Senator Bill 98 acts with amended and Senate has to include the use of telehealth technologies by behavioral health licensing boards. Simply by driving down the cost of health care to us and Sierra for through other processes going on in the building. This is an important piece of Medicaid reform as well. Improves access of residents to health care and improving their professional conduct claims against a physician who is licensed in Alaska but out of state at the time of prescribing a prescription drug to a person located in Alaska. In 2014, legislature passed House Bill 281 on a near unanimous vote to allow a physician to prescribe a prescription drug to a person without conducting a physical examination with certain parameters. The prescription drug cannot be a controlled substance. And for the controlled substance, a healthcare provider is required to be present with the patient to assist the physician with examination, diagnosis, and treatment. But that also requires a physician to be located in the state. So to be clear, a physician gets can and can conduct a remote diagnosis and prescribe a drug to a patient in Quebec, Medicaid, King Salem, and Colby, or whatever I'm telling. We're only one of two states, Louisiana, that have a law that does not allow state-side physicians to practice telemedicine across state lines. And so the pool of physicians is greatly diminished as they provide this service. Senate Bill 98 addresses this lack of physicians available to do more remote consults by removing the physical in-state presence requirement, thus increasing access to health care for Alaskans that just don't have good health care access and options. These physicians still need to have an Alaska medical license. Telemedicine services average less than a third the cost of an in-person office visit and less than one-tenth the cost of an ER visit. Madam Chair, I think the state of some physicians are concerned about is already allowed and happening in Alaska by remote prescription medicine going on right now today. With no in-person visits required for HB2, you live in Alaska, and the only difference with this bill is the physician may actually be stateside. From a patient's perspective, there is zero difference. Further, the Alaska State Medical Board is administering less than medical license privileges to stateside physicians for decades. DHSS has been using stateside physicians for years to deliver health care via telemedicine to Alaska. Alaska's Affordable and Affordable Rights is outlined at 7AC110.620-639. Dr. Melissa Maynard, API order doesn't need a standing box because of a specific issue. So with respect to remote diagnosis and treatment of Alaskans via telemedicine, apparently the sky hasn't fallen. As patients have been devastated, I'd submit to you that this is simply not the case. And the best data available shows patient safety is at least good, if not better, in over prescribing for less outcomes compared to in-person office visits. I submit to committee members a report of the Federation of State Medical Record Boards of the United States, a national nonprofit organization that represents the 70 state medical and osteopathic boards of the United States and its territories on medical policy for the appropriate use of telemedicine technologies and the practice of medicine. Notably, this report concludes that the physician-patient relationship is clearly established when a physician agrees to undertake diagnosis and treatment of the patient, and the patient agrees to be treated, whether or not there's been an encounter or person between a physician and patient. Senate Bill 98 simply, does these things. It clarifies that our legislative intent is to support telemedicine in Alaska. It prevents the medical board from blocking telemedicine and private sector insurance programs. It assures the patient controls, that the patient controls the medical records, including psychiatric records. It removes the requirement that the physician must physically be located in Alaska. It maintains the requirement that physicians be licensed in Alaska. And it provides substantive cost savings to individuals in COVID programs. Senate Bill 188 is supported by Aetna and Premier Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. In addition, state employees, including HMOs, now have this benefit. And several large corporations in the state have the benefit and are not currently able to use it. Dr. Henry Phillips of Provider of Telemedicine Services has standing by to give testimony in this matter as well. And I just seriously want to thank you for adding me. I know you're very busy, Madam Chair. My staff here, Chief Staff Chuck Cop, is here to go over the particulars of the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Senator J.D., and certainly, this is an important issue, as with most issues, the whole movie fails. And so I appreciate that Mr. Cop is, I guess, going to walk us slowly through the sectional before we get here from the administration and answer questions. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Chuck Cobb, Staff Senator McGee, Section 1 of the bill addresses a prohibition to the Board of Professional Counselors from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a licensee for using telehealth technologies for evaluation, diagnosis, or treatment of a person when physically separated from the person if the licensee or the licensed healthcare provider is available to provide follow-up care. And the licensee follows the patient consent protocols for sending medical records to the encounter to the person's primary care provider. And Madam Chair, this section, Section 1, addressing the Board of Professional Counselors, Sections 5, which is the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Surgeon Examiners, and Section 6, the Board of Social Work Examiners, and in Section 2, the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, are all as a result of behavioral health therapists. A board to be brought in and sent us addressing the behavioral health shortage issues in Alaska and bringing in those boards so that they also will not be sanctioning licensees for using telehealth in their practice. It's important to remember that none of these boards have prescriptive authority like the state medical board does, so they are different. But continuing, Section 2 addresses the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, and similarly, prevents them from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a licensee for using telehealth technologies in the evaluation, diagnosis, or treatment of a person when physically separated from that person if the licensee or another licensed healthcare provider is available to provide follow-up care and the licensee follows patient consent protocols for sending medical records of the encounter to the person's primary care provider. Madam Chair, we do have a letter of support from this board and in the package to fully support this amendment. Section 3 is part of our original bill prohibiting the state medical board from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a physician for using a full continuum of telehealth care, including rendering diagnoses, providing treatment, or prescribing, dispensing, or administering any prescription drug as a non-controlled substance without an in-person encounter if the physician or another licensed healthcare provider or physician in the physician's group practice is available for follow-up care, and the physician follows patient consent protocols for sending medical records in the encounter to the person's primary care provider, and removes the requirement that the physician is located in the state. Section 4 prohibits the state medical board from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a physician for prescribing, dispensing, or administering a prescription drug that is a controlled substance if the requirements of Section 3 are met and the physician prescribes, dispenses, or administers a controlled substance when an appropriate licensed health care provider is present with the patient to assist the physician with examination, diagnosis, and treatment. And on this point, Madam Chair, I would note that Department of Health and Social Services in their comment to ask us to consider using also the word certified, indicating that There are certified health care providers in programs that are competent to assist another provider online, but may not be licensed under our state definition of certified in other health programs and under the site of the physician and the oversight of the physician. Section 5 prohibits the board of psychologists and psychological association owners from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a licensee for using telehealth technologies in the evaluation, diagnosis, or treatment of a person when physically separated from the person that the licensee or another licensed healthcare provider is available to provide follow-up care. And the licensee follows patient consent protocols for sending letters and records of the encounter to the person's primary care provider. And finally, Madam Chair, Section 6 prohibits the board social work examiners from imposing disciplinary sanctions on a licensee for using telehealth technologies in the evaluation, diagnosis, or treatment of a person when physically separated from the person that the licensee or another licensed health care provider is available to provide follow-up care, and the licensee follows patient consent protocols for sending medical records of the encounter to the person's primary care provider. Madam Chair, that is exceptional and brief. I would also note that what is being done here is supported by two states, state funded studies. One of them is going to be placed in mind, and then this report, which is copied to the committee members, highlights the need to expand that telemedicine as rapidly as possible to drive down the cost of health care. And this group report, Assessment of Medicaid Expansion Reform, highlights telemedicine expansion in several areas as an ideal way to contain attributable changes in Medicaid. Also, similarly, the Public Works Report on Corporate Power Health Assistance Services recommends that they have a telemedicine for the same reasons to drive down the cost of health care. Legislation is supported by many groups in Alaska, and that's the Health Foundation. It's supported by a number of national organizations and local organizations. But there is a support of open submit to the committee and stand ready to answer questions.
Thank you. So it appears that, correct me if I'm wrong, it appears that the bill is sort of a scrubbing review of state statutes that then removes impediments to telemedicine. So we've gone through all the different boards, and you're saying, you know, many of the sections of the bill essentially say that if somebody is involved with telemedicine, but they can't, you know, they can't have disciplinary action taken against them for simply bad actions. Would you say that's the...
Yes, ma'am. It addresses the use of that technology. Doesn't need for me the authority of the board to regulate how that is played out, but just simply that they may not impose a disciplinary sanction on a licensee for using that technology while the time is here.
So I guess then the question becomes, what does it look like? I mean, what does telemedicine in Alaska actually look like on the ground for Alaskans? Are those questions part of this bill, or is that something that
Looked at? No, ma'am. The standard of care for telemedicine has been applied in Alaska for almost 2 decades successfully. It's been developed through the Alaskan Telemedicine Center and the Alaska Afghanistan Network, Alaska Veteran Healthcare Network. It's well established. If you are part of any health service, you're eligible for that care, or if you are a federal employee and access to that care, but if you're not in that system, you do not have access to that health care. The standard of care that the physician uses is the same person visit. They still have a discretionary health care provider standard of care that must be applied. But there are people online who are able to speak to that with the authority that actually grants.
Just a follow-up question before we take a question from
Senator Giesel.
So what is in the bill to prevent somebody from going entirely to telemedicine?
Prevent?
But as it, for example, let's say that telemedicine becomes standard practice in Alaska, what in the bill prevents a patient from continually just using it entirely solely for their care?
The standard of care. Is the answer to that is that it's telemedicine isn't appropriate for every physical concern that can come up, and that's part of the health healthcare professionals' responsibility is to put their patient well, and when telemedicine is not appropriate in any given situation. But big technology is allowing more and more use of online services in variety ways. It could be that 5 years from now, people may think of going to a hard physical office for a sample of these, but if you see any of the online surgery, you have to go into the bank to do that. But so, in other words, technology does allow more and more things, but if there's limitations in a physician role, it's just a practice of any standard of care.
So the National Organization for the SD Medical Boards has a model policy on telemedicine. It's in our packets. I encourage you to look through that. It requires a physician-patient relationship. And that's sort of the heart of my question is, what does it actually look like? I mean, is it driven by the patient? Is it driven by the doctor? I mean, obviously, the situation is that the physician is not in the presence of the patient. And what guidelines exist in this legislation that actually sets up a framework so that you don't have a runaway telemedicine situation where patients are no longer seeing a doctor and they're essentially the relationship is not the same as it has been in a traditional
Yeah, that's a good question to have here. So the State Medical Board already issues guidelines. Obviously, we don't have to put in censorship, but the guidelines apply to telemedicine and refer directly to the federal State Medical Board's standard of care on model policy for use of telemedicine technology. And that model policy was number 7. I'm reading from on page 4. Addresses your question about establishing the physician-patient relationship within online 3. It says the board recognizes, this is the Federal State Medical Boards, the board recognizes that it may be difficult in some circumstances to precisely define the beginning of the physician-patient relationship, particularly when the physician and patient are in separate locations. It tends to begin when an individual with a health-related matter seeks assistance from a physician who may provide assistance. The relationship is clearly established when a physician agrees to undertake diagnosis and treatment of the patient, and the patient agrees to be treated, whether or not there has been an encounter in person between the physician or other appropriate supervised healthcare practitioner and the patient. So they clearly say how it is established, and that it may be established when a patient reaches out to contact a physician, the physician agrees to undertake the diagnosis and treatment, and patient needs to be treated, and then an in-person encounter is not necessary to establish that patient-patient relationship. That's really an open model policy.
And this one, do you support that group's model policy or other areas that cause you concern if you know?
I do support it. The bill sponsor supports it, and it is a policy that is followed by nearly every state.
And the Federation of Supervisory Policy on appropriate telemedicine.
Senator Diesel, followed by Senator Stevens. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to perhaps clarify some misunderstandings that folks might have just reading this over. First of all, the piece that's being changed in this bill is the piece that requires the physician to have boots on the ground in Alaska and provide this healthcare through electronic means. I will also underscore what Mr. Kopp has said, that it has been going on in our state for quite a number of years. The Federal Health Consortium has been doing it through their federal licensure authorizations. The practitioners have been doing it for a number of years. In fact, in my community of Burnwood, there is a clinician who owns the clinic there, is currently expanding to provide these services to community folk. So the Board of Nursing has not ever restricted the use of telehealth. coalition to help boots on the ground in Alaska. There are mental health provisions for mental health practitioners in this bill. This is an amendment by our Congressional Health Committee. And let me be clear, none of those amended pieces provide that these mental health providers would be in overfunded. So the provisions in this bill would simply authorize their regulatory boards to make those determinations. So the boards themselves will make that decision about whether the psychologist needs to be an Alaska resident within the ninth year or not, say with the social worker. So really the only piece in here that's changing, the boots on the ground piece, is for the physician, the state medical board. I appreciate your questions about the physician patient relationship, Madam Chair. And it raises the question in my mind, I wonder if the sponsor or Mr. Cloud have considered it. And that was the outcome of the O'Malley case that happened, I'm going to say, in the early 2000s. And this was a liability situation where a patient called after hours, about midnight or so, as we call. And Dr. O'Malley said to the patient, you need to go to the emergency room. The patient did not follow these instructions, had a negative outcome. And Dr. O'Malley was subsequently sued. So I don't know how many of them called their physician or healthcare provider after hours and gotten that message. If this is an emergency, go to the emergency room. That's a liability piece that they're attempting to cover. So my question to your sponsor or his staff is, was that taken into account in terms of what liability the healthcare provider in this case should provide for a physician? What coverage in terms of liability is being provided for them? What recourse would a patient have should the advice given be inappropriate?
Through the chair, sorry, Rachel, thank you for that question. We have not taken into account that specific case. That scenario is a liability scenario. Certainly something that all professional practices have taken into consideration. A PhD employee who has a number of Alaska cares has on their card when they enter a number to call before they go to the emergency room at night to talk to a nurse to find out how bad it is, do you need to go to the ER room? I mean, we are already doing that, and these people are out of state, and they're answering our phone calls on our health care insurance program. I have saved state money and trying to get us the best advice possible to show over the phone. And I think that liability, certainly there's exposure that are whatever we do that, but it's just a matter of giving the best care that we can under circumstances and weighing, you know, cost risk. We feel that's a well-established purpose that is used by in most all states.
Just to follow up to that, you know, when you call a nurse or you want to give a prescription, which in this case, you potentially could be receiving a prescription, which would really not be accurate for whatever your health challenges at the time. But I believe you have the company that would benefit from this on the line, so I'll ask them some of those questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
And there are actually several telehealth providers. There's nobody, one person that stands to benefit from this under the license. And also, the licensing requirements are identical for in-state physicians and out-of-state physicians. So you can't practice in Alaska with your license in Alaska.
Sarah Stevens.
I have the impression that there was no case in which someone not in Alaska would be able to prescribe a controlled substance. I'm not sure that there are exceptions for this case. I represent the as we all recognize the horrendous impact that prescription controlled substance drugs have had on all of us and all of our communities. And this stuff gets out on the bipartisan and it's on the streets and there's a body of some of the other. So I don't know whether it's Biden or the other one. So I think So I guess that causes some concern because it appears that Thor says that telecommunication could prescribe this drug without seeing the patient. And I'm not sure if that's true because I see the next screen that says appropriate license after repair for a fresh amendment from this time. Is that a full license made for doctor? Is it physician assistant? I mean, who is that medical person? I understand. And how do we control these drugs that are in the public's hands so to the user? For example, Sniper's deal, so that's a great question. And yes, the bill does say that in those circumstances where the controlled substance is prescribed, there must be a healthcare, a licensed healthcare provider with the patient to assist in the diagnosis and treatment of that prescription. So there is things on the ground with the person that they must be. So why doesn't that person prescribe? Is it the person, the doctor online? Certainly not every provider has prescriptive authority. They do have great capacity to evaluate and assess and assist the doctor with a prescribing physician and knowing if it's correct or not. But that doesn't give them a prescriptive authority. I'm not sure I agree with that. Why wouldn't you require someone with a full ability to prescribe the Plaquenil or Oxycontin? Why would you demand that that be for someone facing that patient?
Well, I think what you're saying is why would you require it? Are you saying why not have another person with prescriptive authority with the patient?
Right.
Well, you really don't need to tell them because you have someone right there with the patient with prescriptive authority. So what
progress are you saying? Did you see a danger there?
Well, if you're growing up in rural Alaska, I know it's not a care center, because you're very familiar with that. There are small villages and small areas where there are medical supplies, a lot of veterinary clinics where there are health aides that are responsible for oversight from overseeing physicians that tell them who you give and when. Growing up in a long way from the country, what the doctors used to call around the lake once a week. Which health aides were telling them who's presenting to what, and they would say, well, only families that have such and such. We've been doing it in Alaska for a long time. You're right, there's an ideal where you could raise the standard to basically the same as a physician. The point of this isn't to completely restrict the license of healthcare providers so that those could not be found in some of these villages and places to assist physicians on the other end.
I guess, in the face of the over-prescription of these drugs and the abuse that's been made of them, if it's seriously, then this might be as worse. Thank you. Which is causing
me great concern. The data in research or reports that are actually included on telehealth prescription shows that they actually prescribe less than what they do in person. And I'm not sure if there are experts online who can give some reasons for that, but they don't support that over prescribing.
Sorry.
I think the concept that we're missing is that generally telemedicine is a lower level need. It's often a sort of entry into medical care for lower level medical issues. And typically, one of the reasons why somebody had to do this stuff that they likely under prescribed is that someone would move them to a higher level of care if there was an actual issue that required a prescription, particularly of a controlled substance.
Someone from outside the city on a coalition have a prescribed controlled substance, I think you better have someone facing that patient. And I know you have a problem already, and I'm not saying that the Alaska medical commission is great because they're going to go, I'm sorry, yes, it is. There's so much drugs on the street. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Blair.
I feel a little concerned about physicians outside the state of Alaska, making decisions, medical decisions, analyzing the rural for a state that surprising in Arizona or Dallas, Texas, has no idea what it's like in Bethlehem and middle there. But regardless, I think in your opening statement, you said, or maybe sponsors it, that they have been trying to just use telemedicine docs in state, and there's no reaction or kind of response to it.
Is that correct?
To your question about your concern about rural Alaska, that has been true. I mean, of course, the Alaska Native Tribal Healthcare Network has been doing this for almost 2 decades now into rural Alaska. And we cannot find a single case where telehealth has had a benefit. I'm sure some of the cradle practice that could come up, but certainly we're not aware of cases where the health funds are poor because of this local health network. And we're just trying to make that available to other people.
Yes, it does.
And included in the numbers packets, there is a report of Medicaid. It's done by the Center for Clinical Health Policy, in which they list how Alaska reimburses Medicaid for telemedicine services. And there are many aspects that are reimbursable, and they are done at about 1/3 the cost of as many person visits for some reason. So, if the doctor is in Arizona, do we get reimbursed to Medicaid right, for Arizona or for Alaska?
Through the chair of the Center, I would have to defer to the Health and Social Services on that.
How are the telemedicine providers regulated from the state?
To the chair of CMR, they're regulated by the state medical board bill, and no one can practice in Alaska unless they have a Alaska license, so they have to be interviewed by the board or an examiner has to determine if they're fit to practice in the referral specialties in the medical board of Alaska.
So that a consideration after your chair said your mother is we've had discussions in the other subcommittee in finance, where a significant cost of the state associated with Medicaid care and health care in Alaska is low. So aside from the fact that government costs would be covered by Medicaid where appropriate, it's a dramatic, we expect a dramatic reduction in travel. So the issue of someone flying in for treatment and perhaps not showing up for appointment or those other travel issues in which we spend tens of millions of dollars a year, we expect a fairly dramatic reduction.
Seeing doctors across the United States, that we have a new area, a new arena of the work and scope of these boards that are overseeing these professions.
Not to my expectations of the medical board, we're not traveling around outside the state for the licensing process, that all of the process will occur in the state. You've got to be at the board of the providers, not the board.
Sorry, I was
going to say
that my question has to do with
disciplinary
situations.
If you're practicing in the state of Alaska, my expectation is that disciplinary actions would take place in the state of Alaska.
Okay.
they'll be licensed. Similarly, you may have your practicing physician in the state.
So the physician would be licensed in Alaska, informal now, but if there was an issue related to disciplinary action, would your expectation is that the state normally would go from the state to investigate? Is that the current procedure now?
I think you have to ask an informal health and social services, but my understanding is that the processes would take place in the state. They would be better equipped to answer that question.
Okay, thank you. Senator Diesel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that the Division of Occupational Work Seeking Professional Licensing might actually could answer that question. And I would be interested in asking that division another question, which I know I'm going to have a question for the Social Services Center, but I would be interested in a clarification of how the Board of Medicine conducts their applicant consideration, how they the procedure that is to license the physician on us is my understanding that the person that interviewed that individual, but I could be incorrect. And I do read in the letter that they have a backlog of applicants. So I think they have a rather extensive process. I would be interested in that individual. But I have a question for Mr. Cobb related to the telehealth that is happening right now. You mentioned the rural Alaska and what THC is doing. I know they've been doing it for a very long time, and the clinicians are in Anchorage, the community health agents are in a remote location. They may use a visual connection, visual technology, or just audio. But those clinicians in Anchorage have actually been to those communities. Those clinicians are on the ground in Anchorage and know the antibiotic resistant patterns in certain parts of the state. They may even have met the patient in the past. So that's what I know about NTC. Are you suggesting that NTC may have healthcare providers prescribing primary care physicians or physicians who are located out of state as well? I don't know if you're absolutely that. I don't know anything about it.
For the chair, somebody to deliver absolutely correct. NTHC partners up with multiple physicians in the state in the provision of healthcare services to their health recipients in Alaska.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, maybe we'll ask through a fascinating question and I'll look forward to hearing the answer from, I guess, the licensing personnel. But the question is, how do licensing people who are getting licensed in both the process? And is it not a matter of being used for licensing?
Thank you. I'm looking through the sponsor to Chair Chambers this year, so I think that we'll have an opportunity to thoroughly review this and have this question answered. So certainly, the sponsor will have to bring personal data.
And that the in-state requirement has exacerbated the shortage of care. They, for this reason, they identified the Alaska's behavioral health care system. It's completely necessary for the in-state requirement to be removed. And they talk about how they are local spokesmen with API, our Department of Correction System partners with psychiatrists now. There are many services that we just don't have the numbers to provide for, but we have them if someone in the middle of a psychotic episode. The doctors can look at them and they can see what needs to happen, what they can get to give them. And we feel another purpose of this bill is simply to facilitate what we are doing now to save millions of lives. And that has to be done better.
Thank you for
being
I have a constituent whose son was in API and then released to the home, and have Medicaid or not reimbursed unless it was an office visit. And so, unfortunately, and you know, quite tragically, her child did not get the care that he needed because he was not willing to go into the facility, into the office. So it would just put off that situation where you have perhaps a specific circumstances surrounding an individual and their care prevents them from making a trip to the doctor's office that get the prescribing function to happen. And essentially, it's telemedicine without the actual logistical requirement that it be telemedicine. So, for example, you have someone in a rural community who's talking to a doctor at 8 weeks. Logistically, it's telemedicine because of the logistics. But I'm talking about somebody who lives in Turnigan, whose doctor is in downtown Anchorage, but the child would not be able to, he just wouldn't go. And so he therefore was not able to get his medications and Medicaid would not reimburse because he was not physically able to come into the office. And Medicaid is not reimbursed doctors for travel, so the doctor was not willing to go to the house.
So I'm sure I think that goes a little bit outside the scope of where President Bell, but that you highlighted an issue with reimbursement for telemedicine services.
Thank you. Senator Kessler.
So, Madam Chair, as I sit here and I have information that will help this discussion, I have to offer it. We have barriers to care, behavioral health care in this state, and that is the requirement that a clinic has to have 30% of the time a psychologist on site. Psychological health and practitioners are prescribers and can meet these health care needs, but are prohibited from doing that because our state has a requirement that a psychiatrist has a physician specializing in psychiatry be present in that clinic 30% of the time for that nurse practitioner to prescribe, which he is authorized to do. In addition, these are behavioral health folks that are named in this bill. They also are prohibited from providing therapy. Therapy is different than prescribing a drug. So when we're talking about a pediatric patient, many times they have a sort of therapy much more effectively than they do a prescription. But the way our DHSS laws are right now, there's a barrier. I realize that's possibly outside somewhat based on this telemedicine thing, but actually it's not. There's a lot of other mental health providers that could be providing services in our state, even though we're not providing psychiatrists here.
Thank you for that, Senator Kessler. So it's really good. Expertise on the clinic.
Senator,
could you respond to that?
No, I haven't said any of the expertise. This is actually perhaps a misunderstanding earlier in the system. There's an understanding that's suited to your last question. I wasn't sure if you knew that there are out of state physicians licensed today in Alaska. But there are. And they might have the same requirements. The difference is a lot to get the right physician in suit map to practice telemedicine with a patient in peril. This basically extends that ability to have an out-of-state physician that meets the same requirements as a licensed in-state physician.
Thank you so much, Mr. Colley. Appreciate you. Presenting the bill for the first introductory hearing. Next, I'm actually going to invite Jane Hallerman and Sarah Chambers with Commerce Committee and Economic Development Division of Corporation Business and Professional Licensing because we've had a number of questions that members have brought up about the licensure and the specifics and how this would work. So we'll take the first ones and have other members of the administration who are online for questions and probably go with those folks next. Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to recommend Jane Hallerman, the Division Director for Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. And with me today is Sarah Chambers, Division Operations Manager. And hopefully, between the two of us, we can answer most of your questions. Would you like to respond to the questions that you heard that were already composed related to the division's work?
Right.
you're right, the expenditure, Senator Diesel, they do the medical board does do in-person interviews at the time of COVID licensure. So that is that. And the comment with that change on it is lower pass. The bill doesn't as necessary to let it change the authentic of the licensure, all the same procedures would be in place. It would be the expectation as the sponsor side for the applicant to come to Moscow at their own discretion for coordinating the output interview beforehand. It's the last stop in the process that can be very long, particularly because some of the medical applicants have scores and scores of hospital privileges and they have license certifications or other states. So licensure can sometimes take anywhere from a couple of weeks to 6 months. Depending on how quickly those processes can be completed. But in person interview of the family's cost is the last step along the way. And how many individuals are in the queue right now for becoming licensed in LISA? Madam Chair, this is Ms. Chambers. I don't know as of right now how many are waiting. Last summer, we experienced significant delays in licensure due to some vacancies in licensing examiners, and we were really unprepared for the influx of applications that came in when SB-281, the previous salary symbol was in place. Our applications doubled. And we had no additional fiscal building, no additional staff and resources. So we were unable, with that limited impact on telemedicine in the state, unable to keep up with the demand. And facilities suffered. We did develop a relationship with API as an example, where we were expediting there and other rural facilities. We heard from them that they had critical need of API shut down. We moved to the front of the line. The licensing process would not give in-state Alaskan doctors any preference over any other applicants. So without additional resources, sort of foreshadowing our fiscal note, without any additional resources, we would not be able to maintain the service levels that you measure from your constituents that we hear from facilities with the dramatic opening of doors that the bill would provide to doctors across this nation and even in other parts of the world who don't have this in Alaska. It's a data resource issue. Thank you. Senator Stevens.
We also have a medical board who was up made up of and called it a meeting, and this is an enormous addition to the responsibility of our nonprofit on the top of the country. We also said that if you have a higher whatever responsibility of additional parents to address the need, and you know, all the other doctors are there. Thank you on that one.
To the Chair, Senator Stevens, this is Ms. Chambers. The board, the exact makeup of the board, we don't have at the top of the column, but it's approximately 9 to 9 people, primarily different physicians with different specialties, and every one of our boards does have public presence. Most boards have 1 or 2 public members that are engaged. They are, at least they have a license in Alaska, and I believe all of the medical board members are residents of Alaska.
And they found out that I have responsibility to this board.
Thank you, to the Chair, Senator Stevens. The board typically meets quarterly. We would expect that in order to maintain efficient and expedited services for Alaskans, that the board would have to add some meetings or at least extend their meetings to
and at the in-person interviews that would need to take place to get a permanent license. It is possible to get a temporary license for a shorter period of time, but that is a limited journey that ultimately could not be granted again if permanent licensure wasn't taken. We would expect a dramatic increase in volume and perhaps complexity with the logistics of working with doctors across the nation and in rural areas. It is true that there are plenty of doctors outside of Alaska right now who are licensed. We often have rural communities who bring up specialists from down south who can necessarily live or be able to find full-time work in a village, a cardiologist, for example, a psychiatrist, but they come up from other areas. So we do have quite a bit of out-of-state licensed folks who do visit Alaska right now, and with the existing town medicine, we saw a large influx of people who were quickly anticipating this bill. Thank you. And with that, do you want to go over the fiscal bill from the department, please? Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The first one I would recommend is substitute, which is on the 24th, begins with $343,000 in personal services. This would allow us to employ two additional licensing examiners to process the applications, and two additional investigators for the board to be able to follow up on any disciplinary matters that would perhaps take place due to complaints from Alaskans about the care they received through donors and providers. We did not factor in any specific travel needs, but we did factor in a large legal support amount of $148.6 in the dollars in the second year and now ongoing for those investigative needs, and $52,500 in just staff support for those four staff members, with an additional $20,000 in commodities for computers and office furniture. So our entire fiscal year in the first year is $415,500 and out in years $491.6. Can you talk briefly about how exhaustive or extensive the drafting of regulations is you're expecting if the bill might pass? This point, I'm sure this would primarily be this is not a question I discussed with the medical board. Specifically, I have spoken with some of the other boards and health boards that were added. We would expect that all five of those boards would need to draft regulations, and that would be an additional cost of, which is worked into the fiscal note of about $10,000, but it would be a process that all five boards would need to go through. I think each board would have a different specific need. They're looking at therapists. Their session in the bill is a little bit different and more expensive than some of the other programs. And we do have Dr. David Powers, who has a helper online, so we will receive additional interviews from the administration that we have here waiting. Thank you for your patience. That's for our students.
Just my regulations. Other states would that lead to disciplinary action here in Alaska, or if it's going to be under this legislation, so that would impact on their ability to work in Alaska?
In the Senator Stevens, there is a national database of disciplinary actions several states participate in. So when there is a disciplinary action on a licensee in Alaska, and that leads to and perhaps in practicing in another state, have a disciplinary board in another state, have finding or taking action on their license, that is immediately known to our board, and our board reviews those and can take action very efficiently with the state.
I appreciate that only one action is being taken, someone for charge, some violation, but only one action is taken in California. Or that they have been in the right terms here, but this is what our functioning is awry, and would that lead to their not being able to practice the law here?
Sure, Senator Stevens, the database, the sort of the secondary or passive impact is only for incidents that have happened in other states. Well, I want to say patients, perhaps, if there is the licensee, the physician, or the other practitioners are practicing on an Alaska, and the jurisdiction is in Alaska, and that the Alaskan will contact our office. We'll file a complaint and say that they received tertiary care or something inappropriate happened, and then it would be jurisdictional of our investigators to pursue that through the telemedicine company, maybe through the state of licensure or the private practice in another state we had occurred. Ms. Chambers, of the board of the department, which are the ones are in the bottom and which ones are in the back? I know that having overseen the department's budget and the other body, we've been following closely the boards and commissions and advising their boards to see their status. Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm just saying that I have that information handy. I don't know if you just get that to the community. It might be more efficient to do that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Any further questions of community members? Okay, Sina, thank you very much for being here. We also have online division of healthcare services, and we have plenty of health and social services. We have Margaret Brown here with the division of Dr. Melissa Rain. Would members who have questions related to their scope of work like to rephrase those questions, perhaps Senator Diesel? Thank you. I'm sure I would love to. I guess I think of two questions. First of all, does Medicaid reimburse for services that a health care provider, I'm going to be broad here because I do understand how many dispositions, does Medicaid reimburse and for telemedicine, and do they reimburse, how do they do their reimbursement if the health care provider is outside the state of Alaska? And either Ms. Brody or the other person who answered the question is Ms. Brody or Dr. Rain, would you like to respond to Senator's question?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. This is Margaret Brody, Director of Healthcare Services. Senator Hayden, just to share, yes, we do reimburse for mental health services. As a matter of fact, since fiscal year 2010 to 2014, our medical services have increased over 400%. And how we reimburse for those services is that they go for that service the same as they would for the office that they use the telehealth code.
Senator
Diesel, I follow up on that. Ms. Brody, the out-of-state health care provider, how was the mechanism for reimbursing them?
services are they don't take services. So there is actually a deal open. There's a facility fee for new applicants, and then there's the thing of the actual town hall services outside of that.
Some is going to follow up on that. The department would then bill, I guess, for the portion that is relevant to the Alaska portion?
Not sure. For Alaska, Native American Indians participating in tribal health, it could be that they are using other tribal health systems in other states also.
So I guess just to continue on that line of questioning, so let's assume it's a non-Alaskan Native person using a teledoc again in Arizona. At what rate does Medicaid reimburse at the Arizona rate or the Alaska rate?
I can tell you that when doctors personally saw the patient, we felt always you like to spend on those efforts. So doing the budget for disabled man, such as raising the level of difficulties, and doing a good job increases the possibility of not being a writer making this game. And so it just puts more burden on the provider for knowing that. And knowing his limits, returning patients appropriately, and I understand that it is a burden you have to do the best you can for your doc, and we've been doing that. So, who's best? Doctor, patient, in the same room, saying best. Doctor, treating patients, at some of those times, everything you write is there, let me help the doctor, physician, physician, who's that meeting up here with the doctor, to address. Doctor is talking to a patient without the benefit of the physical exam or the provider there. So the mission of the medical board is to protect the public, to promote the highest quality health care. And it was perceived by us as not being the highest quality. We've been doing the job for a lot of years, not being able to ignore the patient, and not doing the best you can do. So, there's a section full of blown standards that somebody's been present to stabilize them for many years. The other thing I'd like to say is that just reading the legislation itself to me has always been kind of perplexing. And it's been almost as interesting as it turns out that the medical board may not sanction. It almost sounds as if we're about to do something that was, you know, wrong or bad to do. Last week or last year, well, you can't punish us for doing this. I think if you're going to make a common medicine addiction to our statutes, you should just say that. We're going to allow this to go to the next and try to tell them how to do it. You have found it in federal records. And, you know, that's just kind of happening. I'm very thankful that you got rid of those kind of problems in Alaska Commission because that caused a lot of problems with interruption of psychiatric health care in Alaska. I think I have nothing further to say, but I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Powers. Senator Mitchell, do you have a question? No, actually, I think Senator Stevens has a lot of questions about the burdens. Okay, we'll roll down the field with Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Chair. What will you do about it? I appreciate your comments. I think you're going to be and think pretty seriously. But I think I have your impression of what does greatly expand the responsibility of your board, or how would you handle it if you're trying to get more outside doctors to approve?
Senator Stevens, the chair, thank you very much for asking that question. Yes, there's been already a large burden of new applications that have to process, and that's kind of the setting of a hiring phase. And so we don't have licensed examiners enough to go around to process all the licenses. I just think process itself is happening to say, we just process a license. As with any other, we do not interview every applicant. We used to do that in the past, but it's simply not possible to do that. But we do interview applicants if we have questions about their license, about their education, or we see a potential red flag on their application. So we still do every meeting interview some licensing applicants.
Thank you. Next question I have to do with somebody in another state being a discipline or a threat of disciplinary action or being under investigation. How would you deal with that? Would you allow a person to disciplinary action, or how does that work? And are we able to really follow through on such disciplinary actions?
Well, certainly much harder to do. But if we move someone under investigation in another state, we will usually try to be part of that investigation because it directly affects their ability to deliver health care in our state. So, you know, we may put their license on hold, so to speak. We will definitely want to know what's going on in the other state. It will affect their ability to practice medicine in our state.
Thank you, Chris. center. I just realized how much money you spend on the medical board doing that job.
There's already a lot of time. I've been talking in a lot of cases that we each member of the board does. Two board members, five physicians. And we start giving up the cases that come to us. So I would say I probably spend, I don't know, 2 hours a week.
Because the whole idea is to do a regular doctor
patient-physical interaction. So I don't know how you would write that. And I'm happy to talk with you more. I have to figure out what you're talking
about. Okay, well, we're going to use some interesting time, I guess. If you have any other questions for Dr. Powers, we really appreciate you listening to the entire testimony of this afternoon, and we will be in touch with you if there's any questions or further follow up needed. So thank you, Dr. Powers. Next, we have Claudia Tucker, who is calling in from Virginia, and Claudia is with Teladoc. Claudia, would you like to provide your comments, and then perhaps we have some questions for you, listener?
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair, for this interview. My name is Claudia Tucker. I'm the Vice President of the Affairs at Teladoc. I have a lot of allocated to Teladoc in 2012 and 2013. I'm really amazing. Thank you.
have any other questions?
I appreciate the comments. I'm obviously understanding the situation. But if you talk about it,
my concern, if you heard me speak with the chair of the state medical board, are the use of antibiotics. How do the provider in your network, who is in Florida, know the recent strains that might exist in a community such as us?
We need to go to the international level because it is an international problem. And the over-prescribing of antibiotics is real. And we do everything we can to not really care. And so we've got data, some good data, that shows that our antibiotics starting rate is equal to or less than the usual risk score. Now, having said that, there's still too much. And I think that in the legislative program across all the country, they were still too high and too high for traditional risk score, and so we need to work together to definitely reduce them. And I hope that I answered your question. But in fact, the standard of care, which is a discussion, your physician, the licensed physician, the medication you want to carry in South Alaska, and it's just a special discretion. If the patient presents to him, and he knows the medical history in front of him, if it's his professional discretion, he believes that this is a antibiotic, then he will, and he will agree to write this prescription. On the other hand, we've got 94% of our patient satisfaction rate. The 6% that I'm satisfied for is those who didn't give them that antibiotic that they just knew they needed. Or we didn't give them that vitamin that they knew would make them
not exactly. So, we know that sinusitis can't be diagnosed really without imaging. It is overprescribed, and it's overprescribed in this scenario. And so, that's one concern. My second concern is the question that I had previously asked. How does a physician in Florida, in your diagnosis, randomly being Florida's the greatest place away from here, know what the susceptibility patterns are for UTIs, let's say, in Alaska? I'm going to move on to the next question as well. I'll give you a part of your questions.
I'll
stop there.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the
Thank you. History. So now you're getting that history. Perhaps you could tell us how that happens and how you maintain the security of documents.
Thank you.
was going back to the disease. And also had a company called American Model, and that technology we saw about 5 years ago. And what we saw there was the ability for everything that happens at a doctor's office visit to happen other than the physical death of the patient. So things that were important, you know, for years, doctors had a challenge sometimes with their lungs if they prefer the work we're doing on the phone. We know our patients call them, we spend a lot of time treating them, and then the great birds that they have plans and employers. And essentially, because oftentimes no one knows what happened. Was it a 5 minute call? Was it a half an hour? Is there a medical record that was generated? And so, when we saw this technology, we realized that the patients couldn't identify, the doctors couldn't identify, the patient actually has a choice of doctors. And there's an actual CPT code, there's an ICD-9 code, or a medical discharge, but there's a procedural code that's a diagnosis code, if the diagnosis is made, if there's a prescription, if it's an electronic prescription, and there's a permanent record, there's a medical record, all these things go on this, that any claims submitted to the health plan, they just didn't have it in the office, other than the patient to the doctor, to the patient, or being able to touch. The doctor has a live sanitization video on their computer or tablet, and they're able to see the patient, sees the doctor. So we rolled this out as a covered benefit starting in 2013. And we're now moving across 27 states. And I had a regional one where I found some slides, and I already have the standing at the table. But on the third slide, and in that map, you can see that there's a couple of states. There's just a couple of states where we're not along the lines, because one of them is because of two things. It's because the doctor is a patient, but they're presently before this law, and they're unable to prescribe. And that wasn't in credit, but they're in their experience. They see the patient and realize that they need. They have been done, they need another drop, but they said, well, you're going to need to find a way to go to the doctor, and he'll ask you tomorrow. All the physicians are board certified in the states where the patients exist, so if the patient is only able to see doctors with a medical license in the state where they live, this is becoming very much embraced and welcomed by employers. Employers are very frustrated with paying millions of dollars a year in emergency room visits for patients that didn't belong in the emergency room and weren't able to get to their doctor. We strongly recommend that everyone have a relationship with a primary care doctor. We don't want to interfere with them anyway, but there are times when people cannot get to their doctor. And so we have to have a moment in this and three things: access to care, affordability of health care, and the consumer's convenience. So we have employers for models in Alaska, like Wells Fargo, Safeway, EKSOs, Edward Jones, Coke Industries, Grant Construction, and Walmart, the Kroger Corporation, Federal Express, PepsiCo, and so on. And so many of the offices that are employed in 47 states in Alaska continually have to meet from the world suspension. I understand the doctors that I report various comments that they can do. I very much appreciate them. I'm not a physician myself. I work with physicians. I have been for 21 years across the United States. I work with physicians at the Medical Center and the Cleveland Institution. And I can find physicians at any of those institutions who will say, definitely, that they do feel there are a whole host of things that they can adequately use clinical judgment, diagnose, and determine whether or not they should write a prescription. If they don't feel that they should, then they wouldn't. And that's what we're discussing about the doctors using clinical judgment. There are emerging clinical guidelines for treating ear infections and many other things without the tools you would have in your office to build your telehealth protocols that are evolving. I would defer that to another one that's present, and they can welcome us and provide doctors to actually treat patients who don't know that right. The
and having to compare it to an emergency room is a process that an emergency room is a better retail point. And creating three episodes of care, looking at what happened over the next 3 weeks and including all of that. When the whatever patient physician sees it on my helpline, they're asked the question, if this was not available, then what would you have done? And we also took that data, the prevalence of women who go to the emergency room, women who go to urgent care, and so on. And doing this in the area typically has actually been submitted to be published. The average savings is $201 every time a visit took place. So from a kinetic animal standpoint, employers are paying healthcare to all of their areas are interested in them. From a continuity of care standpoint, again, we urge people to use this when their doctor is not available. It takes 100% of the Federation of State Medical Board guidelines for associated with active telehealth. It's always managing doctors with medical license during that state. It allows a patient to have choice of physician. They clearly identify the patient. They might want clinical substances permitted to be prescribed. The system will not allow it. If those that are not licensed controlled substances or those controlled by the Drug Enforcement Agency, DEA. We also don't allow lifestyle drugs, as was mentioned earlier, and that would be the designer of the road being anything that may have street value that is not really variable to their consideration. And then the medical boards that multiple states are really affected, their concerns were similar, that they serve whatever you need. As they saw the technology and understands the safety and the thought that was built into it, and the fact that all the federations being medical board guidelines are being followed, they were comfortable to say that a lot of opinions is comparable to the medicine that goes in there, but it is adequate to establish a patient-physician relationship and for the doctor to use their judgment to prescribe. They also offer us something to roughly this now 16 million. Covered lives across the United States. 15 million covered lives, it will be close to 20 million covered lives by the end of 2016. If we're not offering it in Alaska, I'm going to hear all of us and try to make sure that we're planning the right way. We also want this to Medicare Advantage members in 12 states. That's all I have to share with you. I'll be able to open up and answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Chancellor. So I appreciate I appreciate a lot the visual that you have with the client. I assume that you have some way of, I'm thinking about a scope that could connect to the technologies and actually see the airtime, a stethoscope that could actually listen to the lungs, but clearly the patient is at home, that wouldn't take place. But let me ask you about this. I see that Idaho is not in the state you cover. Northern Idaho is similar to some rural areas in Alaska, and they're very remote. This I'm not an IT person, but this is about broadband. How do you provide that visual to more remote areas in the states that you cover?
That's a great question. There are the 19 states that are on telephone building. We've just chosen to sort of take the high road and the high standard of how loud it is. So it works if you have a 4G wireless. I don't have to have Wi-Fi, but it works for 3G, but they're available to get from the individual connection they drop. So we're supportive of any that's gone on in the market to expand everyone's access to Wi-Fi. We're working with some states and conversations about purpose and access to the Wi-Fi or public schools that are able Wi-Fi and rural areas. So we have some of that completely. And interestingly, one of the sounds like it's purely to address access in rural areas, it's also very well used in urban areas. Some people are in one part of Los Angeles and their doctor is on the other side of town and it's they're off their sick and they're also a 4 o'clock appointment. It's a duty to be a car directed and I'm driving it each way. So there are times when people just aren't able to get to their doctor. The other thing we're doing is an aside offering this to primary care doctors to use for their own patients. That's obviously the ideal. There are times when we're not after having a full-day patient state they were presented, and we go on the second patient, see a board-certified Alaska licensed doctor online, $99.com, to an emergency room, and I'm going to $1,000 bill for something that is that simple.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson, for being available. Your testimony was very helpful. Next, Robert Menard with the Mercy Health Foundation.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. My name is Robert Menard, and I'm the director of Public Affairs for the Mercy Health Foundation. On behalf of the Foundation and our Board of Directors, I'm here to express support for Senate Bill 98. The Mercy Health Foundation shares ownership in Mercy Regional Medical Center and invests its profits from that partnership back into the community in order to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans living in our community. We conducted a community health needs assessment in 2013 that drew our input from more than 500 local residents to identify what their top health and wellness goals were. Top five goals, as it turned out, were all related to access to behavioral health care. We built our community health needs assessment by commissioning a behavioral health environmental scanner in order to better understand what is working and what is not. In that study, the residents will have access to vital behavioral health care. And as you know, this is not just a massive problem, this is throughout the state. And we've talked a lot today about rural Alaska, which has to have many, many people who are in several hours to have their health care provider. But there are also seniors and other homebound people who have difficulty accessing health care. Telemedicine has improved the way to increase access. Healthcare and reduce cost of visits to emergency rooms for problems that could have been resolved at an earlier level before major financial crisis. We believe SB 98 reflects successful evidence-based practices that can help ease the access to care issues facing Mexico and the rest of Alaska, and that is why we support it, along with our policy changes and legislation related to the issue. So thanks very much for taking time to consider this important and timely legislation.
My goal is to bring down the cost of health care in Alaska without relaxing the expectation of quality care in a great city. And as we saw in all the other aspects, most of the other aspects of what we're trying to do through Medicaid reform, we find some resistance. And a lot of that resistance is some of the way things have been done. Some of it is based on some very real concerns that we need to evaluate as we're going through some of this legislation. I wanted to point out a couple of other things as well. First of all, as you know, the SCPs are receipt supported, so those that receive licenses provide the funding for the ISOC General Fund dollars. Very important point. And the increase in what it may be if we have renewed interest in licensing from out of state. I would love to see the potential for a preference for in-state physicians. An in-state service guide when possible. We can't see that level of capability. Sometimes we have to look out of state. I don't know about the constitutional legality for interstate commerce, but as long as they have an in-state preference for the licensing positions to be licensed first at the front of the line. And there was a statement from Dr. Powers about changing the relationship. And just to be clear, if you review Fiscal Committee, you're going to see that this bill does not affect there's a lot of the telemedicine, and in some cases, in Alaska, the city of Diesel Center has some prior relationship to managers. This just simply takes that same level that's under House Bill 281 and moves it across this imaginary line called the state line. So, last point, Madam Chair, and we're open to any other things, information that we can provide on this bill. It's important because we have a crisis on spending $1.4 billion on essentially health care in the state, but we do not write the law, as you know. I do like a negative sound of the way the law was written, and if there's a way to change that, we're certainly in favor of it. But as you know, we often receive our bills back from drafting, and we should examine it differently. It certainly is not designed for a negative outcome, it's designed for a very positive outcome in providing additional care and state of loss and reducing the cost by doing so.
Thank you again. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your thorough review of and all the material you provided. I look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you, Jerry.